Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thanks a lot for downloading and listening. I'm your host, Neil Horowitz. You can get more information on the podcast and see some previous episodes at dsmsports.net and follow me on Twitter at njh287. Got a really good show for you guys. I think you're really going to enjoy it. We're going to be talking to Nita Srikanth, social media producer for ESPN. Real good conversation with her. You guys should definitely stick around for it. But first, we have this episode's helpful tool. And this episode's helpful tool is really a great way to create some engaging social media content for your brand, your organization, your team. And it's a quiz creating website called Quizzer.com. That's Q-Z-Z-R.com. It's a freemium website, so there's some free and premium options, of course. And there's a couple different kinds of quizzes that you can create in a matter of seconds. One is the straight-up graded quiz, so you can have a right answer or wrong answer. Another one, which is the other version, which is a lot of fun for social media in particular, is an outcome-based quiz. So based on the questions you, based on the answers you give to questions, there's a certain outcome. So for example, you know, which player on the team are you most like? And then you can map out how the answers correspond to a player that ends up at the end, similar to, you know, a character on the TV show or whatnot. So really a lot of fun ways to create some quizzes that you can do contests with or just put up on social media as a way to engage your fans. It's really shareable, really fun, really easy content, whether it's in the off season or during the season. It's a lot of cool ways to utilize Quizzer.com. You can customize the title, the different kinds of outcomes, write all your own questions. It's a really pretty visually appealing and easy to share, easy to use, and I think you guys can get a lot out of it. So that's this episode's helpful tool. Start creating some fun quizzes to engage your fans today. Check it out, Quizzer.com, Q-Z-Z-R.com. I think you'll have a lot of fun, and I want to see some quizzes out there pretty soon. All right, that's this episode's helpful tool. We'll be right back for a really awesome conversation with Nita Srikanth, social media producer for ESPN. All right, that was this episode's helpful tool. And now we're going to have a great conversation. Really psyched about today's guest. We have Nita Srikanth, associate social media producer for ESPN. Really psyched to have her on. We're going to have a great conversation about everything she does for ESPN social media outlets. And thanks so much for coming on the podcast tonight, Nita.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
Really psyched to have you on, but before we get into the meat of our discussion today, we want to get to know you, how you ended up at the mothership, having really a dream job for, I'm sure, a lot of our listeners. So give us an idea of your career path, how you get started, how you moved up, and any tips along the way for folks that want to emulate you.
Absolutely. The story kind of starts back in junior high. I was a ball kid for the Dallas Mavericks from 7th grade until I graduated high school back in 2007. Played college basketball. And it kind of opened up some doors for me. I was an intern with the Los Angeles Sparks, the Los Angeles Lakers. Did some color commentary on the radio at my college whenever I stopped playing basketball due to health reasons. And then I did my senior year internship with CBS Television in the PR publicity department, actually. And made some connections along the way. And then as soon as I graduated college, actually 2 days before I graduated, I had a job lined up with the Dallas Cowboys doing a lot of the digital marketing. Eventually worked my way, helped build the social media department there.
Let's back up real quick, Nita. What did you study at Northridge first off, and how did you end up getting that opportunity with the Cowboys?
Yeah, I studied business management at Northridge, but I did a lot of focus on the marketing side of things. Really the way I kind of got the opportunity with the Cowboys was really perfect timing. During the time I was graduating college, there was a NFL lockout back in 2011. And a lot of people, from what I understand, left the Cowboys organization at the time. And they had a hiring freeze. And then as soon as the lockout was lifted, was around the exact time that I was graduating. And there were a couple of open positions. And the fact that I was from the area and headed back there kind of helped me out. And so I like to say it was the perfect place and perfect time.
And, of course, had all that really good experience from doing internships and being active when you were in college as well, it sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very good. So, I guess, give us an idea of what were you doing with the Cowboys while you were there exactly, and how did you sort of evolve over time and develop the skills that eventually helped you get to ESPN?
Yeah, I started out in the fan marketing program where we had the fan club there, and it was primarily within the e-commerce side of things, and helped build out the CRM database. Basically, built a CRM of all Cowboys fans, sort of like a heat map, and eventually started working with different departments and started to help out more on so the social front, and then worked my way into primarily social media before I recently departed for ESPN.
What were the Cowboys doing with social media when you started there and when you left there? I mean, it was certainly still a little bit earlier in the game, I guess, and I mean it's evolved so much since then. So where was it when you started and how was it when you left?
When I first started, there really wasn't too much focus on social media. It was more of a just seemed somewhat of a risk, and it was also seen as someone just kind of hanging out on Facebook and Twitter all day, as opposed to being an actual asset to the organization. And then, there were a lot of battles to be had to kind of get it to where it is now, which is the most engaging brand in the NFL.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a testament to the people that work there that saw the benefits of it and it kind of bring it to where it is now. And can't tell you how easy it is to get engagement on that handle compared to some of the other teams that struggle for engagement.
So was it more of a marketing tool or a PR tool or did they really kind of see it as more of a hybrid and really prioritizing fan engagement first over the more direct revenue generating activities?
I would say it was seen more of a as a PR liability. It's definitely it's within the digital side of things. It was more of a traffic driver, and the marketing department sure did have their hand in it. At the end of the day, they wanted to make money off the handle, so it was seen as more of a sales and digital asset. And eventually, to where it is now, it's basically an outlet for the organization to kind of communicate and engage with fans.
Okay, well, that's certainly more positive to hear than just a straight revenue generating tool. So,
Absolutely.
what kind of skills and expertise did you develop while you were there that made you a good fit for ESPN when the opportunity came along?
That's a really good question. I personally learned how to become an all-in-one digital person. I learned how to cut video. I learned how to create graphics. I learned how to build web pages, get, more on the website side of things, building out a CRM database, and just being an all-in-one person, and with the limited resources that were to be had over at the Cowboys, it just made me much more well-rounded. And when the ESPN opportunity came along, I basically was looking for something that was a little bit more specialized, and I've kind of found my niche here in social media. And so it just ended up being a good fit based upon the fact that I am able to do all of my social media graphics and video on my own.
I mean, it sounds like you really are just a master of several skills and that allows you to be effective with social media. And I think maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like it really helped that while others might come from more of a content background and be really good at creating graphics and that's their main tool, you came and picked up those skills and honed those skills, but really had a great background already in the data side, in the marketing side, and understood what the greater good was, I guess, at the end of the day, or what you were doing with all that content and had a reason for it. So do you think that comfort with CRM and analytics kind of helped you early on?
Yeah, I definitely would say that. But also, everyone in the social media department knows that we're always struggling for resources in terms of headcount. And so just the ability to say that I'm able to do several different roles in one hire, I think it just added a benefit. And in 2015, every social media manager needs to know how to build their own graphics, cut their own video, and create their own content, basically.
That's great. That's really, really good insight too. Now, that's something I always say for people that want to get their start in social and sports is, develop new skills, develop a skill set, have as many skills as you can, and you definitely put them all into practice with the Cowboys and now with ESPN. So, tell me about getting the role at ESPN and what exactly it entails, and how you got started there.
So the role at ESPN that I'm doing is I'm part of the sports vertical here in the social production department. Basically, my role is I our sports vertical department, we handle the MLB, NBA, NFL, and college sports. And as part of the group, you know, we're each assigned sort of a sport, my sport being NFL is my primary. However, we all cover each of the sports that our group basically involves. So during the NBA playoffs, NBA finals, when I was hired, actually, I started out on the NFL side, but was immediately thrown into the NBA playoffs and NBA finals. I did help out with some of the baseball at times, but my primary focus right now is on NFL and particularly Monday Night Football.
Okay, how about before I ask you more, give us a little inside baseball. Did you have to prove that you had enough knowledge of sports in general when you were interviewing with ESPN to get this job?
No, it's pretty much a given that if you're applying to ESPN, you should know what sports are.
Okay, so just to even get in the door, you better know your sports. And I guess if you want to work for ESPN, you're likely a sports fan as well.
Absolutely.
So with your position then, it sounds like you definitely do help out where you can, but you specialize as well. So are you primarily creating content? Are you building reports? And what is your charge as a producer?
Content creation, that's the primary focus of each of us in the department.
Okay, so your role is creating content primarily, you said, for the NFL properties. And is everyone sort of responsible for their own content, or do you have help along the way as well that you can access your more specialized content designers, or is it really all on you and you're a one-man show, so to speak?
Yeah, it's really all on us. We do collaborate with our coworkers. You know, we have a pretty good group over here, and we kind of just discuss and go back and forth on a few ideas. But we're basically each tasked with handling our own content creation.
So it really is a lot of trust placed on all you guys to create content that is befitting for ESPN's, you know, standards of quality, as well as, you know, saying the right things and having the right, I guess, purpose and voice. What's it like, the collaboration and making sure that all the content is up to par for what ESPN wants to be putting out there on a very, very public level, of course, reaching millions of fans?
Well, it's definitely there's a great deal of trust here within our department. You know, we have access to some of the most powerful accounts in sports, each of us. And so there's a lot of trust to be had. And we do also have a long leash in terms of taking risks. You know, I can't tell you, there's not been a day that's gone by where we haven't been told, you know, you should kind of push the boundaries a little, you know, take some chances. We're kind of basically tasked to try and fail and try to do too much, which is an unbelievable problem to have. And it's really rewarding to have, you know, the support of, you know, our bosses that are just basically telling us take risks on a daily basis and try to push the boundaries. But the collaboration is key. You know, I can't tell you how many times we've each collaborated, and the content that we've collaborated on has been just high engaging and high performing. And at the end of the day, because we are sort of tasked with doing everything on our own, there are obviously times when we're not able to keep track of every single thing. So just to have someone that you know has your back, like my coworkers, it's just great to know that we're all in an environment that's collaborating and it's built on trust.
That's really cool. I bet you guys just have so much fun together as well. What a great environment to be working in. When you guys first start out, then, are you sort of schooled, or, I mean, I don't want to say brainwashed, but really made to understand who ESPN is, what ESPN sounds like, and what the brand represents, so you guys can speak on behalf of ESPN, in your case, ESPN NFL and Monday Night Football?
Yeah, so every person that is hired by ESPN actually goes through, like, a rookie camp, which is a two-day camp that kind of teaches you about the history of ESPN and sort of, you know, who they are and what they're trying to accomplish. As far as the social media department is concerned, there is a training program that goes behind the process and how it works, particularly in how news is reported. At the end of the day, we are a company that prides itself on breaking news stories. And so there is a protocol in terms of how you report the news that each of us is sort of, you know, we're understood to, or we're tasked with understanding how exactly that works. And so There is as far as that, but a lot of it really, Neil, in social media, it's really just trial and error at the end of the day.
Certainly. And one thing I definitely really liked hearing you talk about, Nita, when we spoke offline, is how there really is an intentionality behind how ESPN portrays itself and as a brand, as a reputable brand that reports news, that's trustworthy news. Tell me a little about how there is that intentional voice and purpose behind each of the accounts. And, you know, some is more fan engagement facing, some is more just straight breaking news. Tell me a little about how you guys do balance the news breaking and the engagement and sort of poking fun on certain accounts and not so much on others.
Yeah, so our entire social production group, we rally around the SportsCenter account. The SportsCenter account is about 19 million on Twitter, and it is the most engaging and the highest, you know, the biggest brand in sports social media. We rally around them to break all of our news. So we kind of follow their lead in terms of stories. Like, for example, right now there's a lot of trades happening in Major League Baseball. And so SportsCenter is the one who typically breaks the story. And the story then is kind of acquired by, in this case, it's going to be acquired by the baseball account. And the baseball account is going to take the story from there. It's going to say, you know, someone was traded, what exactly it was, what are the implications, and then analysis from the talent that are associated to the baseball group. And then on the other side of the spectrum is the Sports Nation account, which basically is, it likes to have fun. It's probably the most fun account to collaborate and work on, just because we get to just come up with some of the craziest, wackiest ideas, and just we're able to execute it and sort of insulate ourselves from the SportsCenter brand at that point.
I can almost hear Michelle Beadle's voice for every Sports Nation tweet, and always laughing and think about how much fun it is to control that Twitter account, I'm sure.
Yeah, that definitely, you know, that's a great point you make there too. With each of the sports, we each have one talent that's sort of associated to the brand and is most powerful. You know, with the NFL, it's Adam Schefter. With baseball, it's Tim Kurkjian. With NBA, it's Jalen Rose. You know, so we each have sort of a talent that is associated to our brands. But we also have to make sure that the voice is not just one person too. So the Sports Nation account, it's not necessarily just Beadle. It's just more of a comical, humorous type voice. And I wouldn't even say comical. It's more of a witty voice.
Totally. Totally. That's a great way to put it. So when a major news story does break, are you generally like finding out from seeing Adam Schefter's tweet and then going into full-on content mode and trying to drive traffic, drive engagement, or is there more strategy behind it? Do you kind of know in advance when something's going to happen, or does it? I guess it's sort of maybe a hybrid.
It's definitely a hybrid. We do have a newsroom, and the newsroom basically is the heartbeat of ESPN. They're controlling everything. They're the ones who are constantly in touch with our talent, who are telling them what's about to go down, what's happening. They typically are the ones who call in and report the news, and then it gets out. There are several talent who basically have, you know, a lot of respect around here, particularly Adam Schefter, who is basically the guy who breaks every news story. It's not a legit NFL news story unless Adam Schefter says it is. Mm-hmm. But no, typically we're given a little bit of a heads up, and our news editors primarily are the ones who do a great job of making sure we all know what's happening.
That certainly makes sense. So when something big does break, and just to give listeners a little inside scoop, we're talking with Nita Srikanth on the eve of Tom Brady's suspension being upheld by the NFL. So when something big like that breaks, what is sort of the strategy that's guiding your content? Is it just let's get all the information out there we can? Are you trying to drive traffic back to the website? Are you just trying to balance everything and create as much content as you can to build that buzz? Give us an idea, I guess, of what's going through your mind when something like that happens.
Yeah, let me give you some context behind that first. So with the Brady story, typically our talent are the ones who break the story, but in some cases, the story is kind of broken from the NFL themselves. And what happened yesterday was the NFL communications department were the ones who released an email that went out to all of us that said, the Tom Brady decision in the subject line. And at that point, everyone had the scoop, and it is no longer a source story. So what ended up happening yesterday was, as soon as that email came out, I grabbed all of my belongings and I sprinted up to the newsroom, because the newsroom is typically the ones who are able to add the extra layers to the story. So rather than waiting for the story to come out on the wire or waiting for the Sports Center team to kind of call me and let me know what's going on, it's just so much easier to be in the same exact room as what's where all the news is coming to. And then once the story kind of just became clear and it became understood what exactly it was, I then sprinted over to the studio where they were doing the live show to kind of get Adam Schefter and Jim Trotter and Bill Polian's take, so we can just create content on the side that'll supplement what's happening on TV. It's not about driving links back or driving clicks back to the site at that time, because we're in the live window where just the story's evolving on in a minute-by-minute basis. At the end of the day, we do recap it and try to drive traffic back to the site, but typically when a story is broken, our mobile push team will send out a push notification, and they'll automatically be tracking onto the site to see what's happening.
Okay. And at that point, is it primarily speed and accuracy valued overall, as opposed to trying to create like a fun little quote graphic or anything like that?
Yeah, in the live window, it's all about accuracy at the end of the day. I think we've tried the whole speed thing, but really the focus needs to be just accuracy. But that being said, we do want to be fast and quick, because we want to provide fans exactly what's happening, but it's all about accuracy at that time.
Okay, and do you kind of have I don't want to say a checklist, but an idea in your mind of all those platforms you want to make sure that information gets out to and maybe delivered in the right manner? So it's, okay, let me get Twitter, let me make sure I get Facebook, is there Snapchat, is there Instagram, I mean, everything under the sun. What's that process like for you?
Yeah, first is Twitter, second is Facebook, and then third is Instagram. That's sort of the best way to kind of do it, as far as I've seen. Now, as far as the way it's the context is concerned, we kind of leave that up to the news editors. They're the ones who kind of tell us how to properly craft what we're writing, just to make sure we're all on the same page. There's a way to report the news that they kind of just set the guidelines for, and we just follow what they tell us.
Okay. So certainly that relationship is probably just so important to make sure that you're framing your content and you're messaging the right way. So when you are creating content, especially maybe after the live window, so to speak, and it's more just trying to keep the buzz going and really target fan engagement, what are sort of some of the goals that you're, when you're thinking about, let me create some content based on this Brady news or based on this trade or this player signing, what are the objectives in your mind for what you're trying to accomplish with that content?
Well, it's important that as we tweet, we're making sure we're not putting our own opinion into that tweet. Basically just reporting what the content is to begin with. Sort of our focus and our goals and everything we do is just engagement. We're not really, you know, when I first got to ESPN, I was saying, well, we should be worried about clicks here. Like, if we're putting a link out, we should be trying to drive traffic back. While that is sort of a goal on the social media front, it's just so refreshing to hear that our only goal is to engage. If a tweet is not engaging, and by engaging, I mean retweets or favorites or shares or likes on Facebook, then it's not considered good content. And so that's primarily what our goal is in terms of everything that we're doing. However, in the live window, when there's a breaking news story, it's just about making sure what we're reporting is correct and accurate, our stats are accurate, and we're kind of following the guidelines set forth by the company.
Okay, so this is, at the end of the day, though, for your position and your counterparts as well, is your charge, your KPI, the measure of your success really just the amount of engagement you're getting, the reach that your posts are getting on the social platforms, or are there more other KPIs that really help you determine whether or not you're succeeding with content?
Yeah, it's really just about the engagement, and it's also about growth. At the end of the day, when we look back on a weekly basis, how much did our brands grow in the social space? And so those are the only two priorities, I would say, that matter to our department at this point.
Okay. How about just a quick side question? What kind of content, what kind of stories tend to really affect the most growth and engagement? Is it the more juicy stories like the stuff with Brady, or is it just straight up the games and the highlights?
It's actually, I would say it's a good balance of both. You know, the Brady story, I mean, those are given. The Brady stories are going to engage high just because it's breaking news and it's been a decision that everyone's kind of been waiting for a while. But as far as aside from the breaking news, I would say post-game content typically always does really strong because there's excitement around the teams, fan bases that have won. So that typically does the strongest for us as well.
Okay, so if you're prioritizing engagement, I mean, I know you mentioned Sports Nation is really the one that gets to have that witty voice and have more fun with the fans. How do you avoid the temptation to, you know, have a photo that maybe harkens back to Tony Romo and Jessica Simpson days or something like that? That sort of that will, you know, will get that engagement and get all that reach, but isn't necessarily how ESPN NFL accounts should be practicing.
Well, that's, yeah, you know, typically when we have that idea, we'll just shoot it over to the Sports Nation people and say, hey, you should probably do this. This would be perfect for you guys. So that's just the collaboration side of it.
So is it ever tough for you to, are there sort of in-between things where it's not quite Sports Nation, but it's ESPN NFL and it works? Or is it really, ESPN NFL is really straight up news and highlights and you leave all that sort of fun engagement stuff to the properties that it's there for, like Sports Nation?
Well, you know, I would say that there is definitely an opportunity to have some of the fun, engaging posts on the NFL account. But when you get to a point where it's going to be, I hate to use this term, but when you get to a point where the content's going to be a little trolly, I think that's when you kind of start to say that's not on brand and you defer it to the Sports Nation team.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense and definitely important to carry the strength of that ESPN brand. And it sounds like there's a reason they trust you to do that for them.
Yeah, I mean, it's a process that every day there's always one or two things you kind of learn, and a lot of it is really just trial and error at this in the social media space too. So
okay, well, at the end of the day, with prioritizing engagement, there's a lot of value to that, and it's not just, you know, driving more reach for the ESPN brand and ideally getting more people to download the ESPN app, use ESPN3, watch all the networks. How do you guys what I know is ESPN does a really good job of integrating sponsors into their TV properties, into their social media properties, maybe to a lesser degree. Is that a part of the game as well, as with all that engagement to eventually, kind of like what the Cowboys are doing, is make some money off it and integrate sponsors? Is that something that you have to concern yourself with as well?
I don't necessarily, it's not part of my job to handle the sales aspect of it. We do have sort of our department head, Mike Buckland, is the guy who kind of handles all the sales. It's a little different on the sports vertical side because we do have the league IP in our handles with the NFL, NBA, not necessarily BBTN, but we do have to abide by what the league sponsors are because we have the IP in the accounts. On the SportsCenter side, you know, I think they have to kind of manage who the sponsors are going to be. Everyone wants a piece of the SportsCenter account at the end of the day, and if they really wanted to, they could have a sponsor for every single tweet that goes out. But it's more about just managing and kind of reducing the amount of supply and increasing the price on the sponsorship deal. I think that would probably be the way I would characterize how the SportsCenter team is handling the sales side of things.
So are you interfacing with the sponsorship sales guys much? And are they telling you when content should be integrated with a sponsor and how to do it? Or is it kind of like you said, that's mostly on the SportsCenter property where any of that is occurring?
Yeah, well, every handle has some sales element to it at the end of the day. It's just going to be about... our marketing team does a good job of kind of telling us what's going on in terms of the sponsors on the what's happening on the sales side of it. But we do have the collaboration in terms of determining what the content is going to be. And we do work ahead to kind of say, okay, in a couple of weeks, we're planning on doing this with Bose. Or right now, we're kind of figuring out what we're going to do with Dunkin' Donuts. So there are obviously discussions ongoing all the time, and we're not going to ever have something pop up last minute. So yeah, it's not necessarily my responsibility per se to kind of handle the sales element because I already have enough going on, but it is part of our department to kind of understand what the sales activation is going to be on the accounts.
So if a sales guy comes to you and says, we want to activate with Dunkin' Donuts, like you guys are talking about now, are they looking to you to say, how can we best integrate Dunkin' Donuts while still being true to who we are and, you know, creating a valuable experience for fans? Or is it really that them being more direct and saying, here's how we're going to activate Dunkin' Donuts, make it happen for us?
Yeah, it's them coming to us and saying, we want to do something here, what can we do? And we kind of pitch a couple of ideas on what we can do. And most typically what happens, like anyone knows, is that you kind of pitch far to the left, and then it ends up coming a little bit more to the middle once you start negotiating in the sponsor with the sponsor.
Those brainstorms and meetings must be a lot of fun for you guys.
It's so much fun to be in some of the brainstorm sessions that we have here. We have a lot of really good people here that just are just brilliant and have some of the most intelligent ideas I've ever been around. So it's really interesting to be around here in some of the brainstorms.
Definitely keeps the job fun. I love that. Well, yeah. Speaking of brainstorming ideas, then it's a good segue to our next point. A few minutes left here with Nita Srikanth, social media producer for ESPN. How has the evolution of content in general with social media really affected, or how have you seen it play out, I guess, from going back to even your days with the Cowboys when photos were a big thing, then it became all about videos, now there's GIFs, there's Vines, there's so many different things you can put out there on Twitter alone. How has it changed, and what sort of works best now when it comes to content engagement and reach on Twitter especially and social in general?
Well, initially it was all about just putting out the tweet, and then we started to see that tweets with visuals had much more engagement, and now it's, you know, enhancing the visuals to make the visuals really strong. And now what we're sort of doing is we're trying to do as many GIFs as possible over here. I mean, we kind of set the trend in the landscape with some of the GIFs we did on the NBA side of it, and our MLB team is just doing an unbelievable job with some of the GIFs that they produced for the Home Run Derby and right now for the trade deadline. And we're just trying to do as much as we possibly can. So I definitely think the landscape sort of shifted from at one point where it was just put out the text, and then it became about the photo, just a simple AP or image or Getty photo, or then it became about original art, and now it's just about original GIFs. And so that's sort of been the shift. I honestly don't know what is going to come next. There's probably going to have to be some new technology that's going to come out that's going to kind of determine what the next thing is going to be. But I do think right now we're in an era where a lot of the original content has to include GIFs.
It'll be GIFs with Snapchat-like doodles and geo filters. Who knows what's going to come next?
Yeah.
Speaking of that, then, with finding content that really engages fans, we're talking about, I guess, looking at how many views a video is getting or how many loops of Vines getting and making sure the fans are consuming that content at the end of the day. But how do you guys sort of balance or maybe take into account the two-way nature of social media? Is there a thought or a reason and a rhyme to why ESPN chooses generally not to engage in conversations with your everyday fan? Is it just there's too much of that going on, or is it a pretty well-stated strategy?
You know, we don't engage in two-way conversation. I can't really answer as to why, other than to say we do listen to what our fans are telling us. We do kind of monitor the mentions and see, okay, we've done a little bit too much on the Yankees tonight. We need to probably focus on something else. We're kind of listening, seeing it more as a listening tool as opposed to a conversation tool.
Okay. And is part of your job then as the ESPN NFL person, are you trying to look for player reactions, for example, like when the Brady news broke today? Are they looking to you to say, which players out there are tweeting notable things that we can share on SportsCenter or on other properties?
The producers definitely do kind of open dialogue and say, hey, have you seen anything? I think our company in general has sort of bought into the whole social media thing, I guess you could say. And so they're already monitoring it on their own. We do have compressions. We do have sort of feeds set up for all of them to see where they can monitor on their own in the control rooms. That's not to say, though, that they don't come to us and ask questions. We sort of do help them and sort of set the tone for the company in terms of what's happening on the social landscape. But, they do a pretty good job on their own of kind of seeing if Torrey Smith or, you know, some notable players yesterday were tweeting about the ruling. They handle it on their own primarily.
How about, real quick, which player jumps to mind as one that is usually pretty active and you can always count on to respond to any kind of news like that?
Oh, boy. I would honestly say it's LeGarrette Blount, who's Brady's own teammate, but I'm not sure if he said anything yesterday, but there were a couple of people that kind of went off on Twitter about it yesterday. I would say Torrey Smith was one of them. OCU Manura was another one, a former player who's retiring with the Giants. There's always, especially with the Patriots, who are, you know, recently named the most hated team in the NFL, there's always going to be people ready to chime in anytime something like that happens.
Oh, I bet. And then the last thing for you needed before we get to this episode's shareable stat, it definitely sounds like Twitter is the front porch and the number one priority for ESPN social media. Is that very intentional, and why do you think that is, if there is a stated reason for why Twitter really is that first and foremost place that's on your mind?
You know, I don't know if I would necessarily say that. I think we place a lot of importance on Facebook because we do have, you know, a lot of followers on Facebook. I would say we prioritize Twitter primarily because of the nature of being first on Twitter is prioritized, I would say. But
and I guess also the volume it can contain, where Facebook, you really have to be a little more precise with what you're going to put out there because you can't have a billion posts like on Twitter.
Yeah, I would say we kind of use Twitter as our sampling ground, and we kind of see what's engaging high on Twitter, and we take the top 20% of what we put out on Twitter and put it on Facebook. But our numbers on Facebook are extremely high compared to Twitter.
Okay, that makes sense. And I love the idea of using Twitter sort of as your testing ground, and Facebook's where you put your best of and your most conversation and share-worthy stuff. It's really cool. We'll need I'll have a little more fun with you coming up in our nice tease with Nita section. But first, we have this episode's shareable stat coming right up. Really enjoyed the conversation with Nita. Learned a ton about how ESPN does social media and how she does a great job in her own role as well. And there's a lot of collaboration that goes on. But we'll have a little more fun with Nita coming up in our niceties with Nita segment. Some quick-hitting questions that I definitely think you should stick around for. But first, we have this episode's shareable stat. This episode's shareable stat is very relevant to the conversation. It's all about ESPN. And as of spring 2015, so of course it's grown a little bit since then, this number, ESPN's Twitter properties accounted for 47 million unique followers. 47 million, and that's gone up to over 50 million since then. Just consider that for a moment. I mean, you look at the POTUS account, President of the United States account, has only around 3.6 million as I speak right now. So ESPN and their properties reaching a lot more people on a day-to-day basis than Barack Obama himself on his own Twitter account. Just incredible to think about, and incredible to think about how much social media really is driving the bus for a lot of these strong media entities. Yes, ESPN is reaching millions of people on their TV and their website as well, but social media really is where they are reaching millions and millions of people with every single tweet that they put out there, which is why, of course, Nita takes that very seriously. But it goes to show why there's so much value in social media, and why brands and sponsors consistently are wanting to be there at a more increasing basis, and why brands are placing a lot more importance on it, and why they're hiring professionals that they can trust, like Nita and like she spoke to. So really interesting to think about how there's so much reach across social media outlets and how you can make the most of it by really prioritizing engagement over the more shallow metrics like, you know, traffic to the website or these greater lower funnel ROI type things. That's why I really liked hearing Nita talk about how they prioritize engagement and growing their social media following, because you can't have value until you have an attentive, growing, engaged audience. And that's really what ESPN has done and continues to do a really good job with, and why they have over 47 million unique followers across just their Twitter properties. So that's this episode's shareable stat. definitely one worth thinking about, one worth sharing and talking about, and it's all about ESPN. And we're going to get to know a little more about ESPN, especially with our guest, Nita Srikanth, social media producer for ESPN, as we come right back at you with our Niceties with Nita segment. A lot of fun coming right up. All right, that was this episode's Shareable Stat. Very relevant to tonight's conversation. We're talking with Nita Srikanth, ESPN social media producer, and the Shareable Stat, very relevant, is they have 47 million unique followers across their Twitter accounts as of this spring. Really, really impressive, and I'm sure it's growing every day thanks to the efforts of folks like Nita. Is that number just astound you every time you hear it? And as I said, I'm sure it's still growing too.
Yeah, it's ever growing. Actually, I think the numbers topped over 50 million at this point.
And those numbers probably pale in comparison to Facebook and that more global audience. Just unreal that every time you push that tweet button that you're reaching that many fans, huh, Nita?
Yeah, absolutely. It really is.
You really got to take into account, I guess, Herman Edwards. Don't press send until you're absolutely sure. All right, Nita, you survived your interview. Are you now ready for Niceties with Nita?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's have some fun. Number one, your favorite hashtag you've used during your time at ESPN and why?
SC Top 10. I think it's just relevant and in the live window, especially whenever there's an amazing dunk. It's just LeBron with the thunderous dunk, SC Top 10. It's just so useful in at all times.
I can't imagine after a big play like that, especially in like a national game, how much that tweet deck column or Hootsuite column just goes nuts if you're following SC Top 10 hashtag. It's probably just awesome to see that.
Absolutely. It's a fun hashtag.
Number two for you, Nita. The player that generates the most social media buzz and also the team that gets the most engagement for ESPN.
You know, it's an interesting question. LeBron definitely engages high for ESPN. But anytime we can tie in any content in terms of stats back to Michael Jordan, it just goes through the roof. Michael Jordan still engages so high. As far as teams, you know, MLB, it's the Yankees. NBA, it's the Lakers. NFL, it's the Cowboys. So anytime we hit those three teams, it's a good day.
Very interesting. How about the NFL player that generally gets the most buzz when you mention him on your properties?
Well, right now it's Tom Brady, but typically it's Peyton Manning.
Okay, that certainly makes sense. All right, number three for you. Yeah, really, really enjoying these quick hitting questions. I hope the listeners are too. The best type of Twitter content, in your opinion, or from your experience, is it photos? Is it graphics? Is it vines? Is it GIFs?
I think it's GIFs. I think GIFs are, especially original GIFs, are always the most fun.
Is it usually like a GIF of a straight up play of an actual like football play, or is it more the GIFs of like someone doing the Carlton after scoring, for example?
You know, I'm more of a fan of the original GIFs, where you take original art and you kind of add motion to it, sort of like the 8-bit Nintendo series. We've been doing that on the NBA and MLB handles, and it's just, those to me are so much more fun than just taking a screen grab and or taking a little clip and creating a GIF of that.
Oh, interesting, and that's definitely where your skills definitely come in handy, because that's stuff that I can say I'm not too adept at creating original GIFs, but that's where your skills certainly help out, I'm sure.
Yeah.
All right, number four, Brittany, I really haven't found this. The biggest difference, you worked for the Cowboys before coming to ESPN, so tell me the biggest difference between doing social media for a team and doing social media for a media entity like ESPN.
Well, I honestly think it has more to do with the ESPN brand in general, is that things are just not legitimate in the sports world until ESPN says it is. And so it's at times on the team side, you're sort of the last to report what's happening because you have to abide, because typically what happens when the stories break, the team doesn't recognize it until it's official. So right. It's a combination of just legitimizing from what we do. We legitimize the news, we legitimize the scores and everything around sports, but it's also just the fact that we can have the story typically 1 or 2 days ahead of when the team actually reports the news.
And how about with the team? Was marketing in your ear a lot more, whether it's pushing merchandise or advanced ticket sales or anything like that? Or is that not really a big concern with the Cowboys because they sell out pretty much every game like nothing?
No, definitely. That's another great point, Neil, is on the team side, there was definitely much more of a of a push and sort of a mandate that we needed to kind of drive sales and conversions. On the ESPN side, we just get to have fun and engage people with people.
I love that. That does sound like fun. All right, number five, where I really sucked to hear the answer to this one, and maybe it occurred in the last couple days here. Your most memorable day or moment during your time at ESPN so far?
Definitely yesterday was very memorable, but honestly, the most memorable moment was game four of the Western Conference Finals this year, when on the NBA account, we did an NBA Jam night, and we had a bunch of throwback art, and the entire game, we were kind of tweeting as if it was NBA Jam, and it was, you know, kaboom, boom, shakalaka, he's on fire!
Oh, like, wow.
It was a lot of fun. That was definitely one of the most memorable things I've ever done in social media.
Oh, that is fantastic. I think every listener that grew up in the 90s is just smiling really wide right now. I know I am. I love that. All right, number six for you, Nita. The coolest athlete that you've met or with whom you've worked so far at ESPN?
I would probably say Rob Gronkowski. He came up here for the Madden cover vote, and we did a Periscope with him, and they actually tried to get him to end the Periscope with him spiking the phone, but he was very nice and said no, he wouldn't break my phone.
That's fantastic. And you know what? Watching Rob Gronkowski recently on the ESPYs, I thought he represented himself very well. And yeah, he has a lot of fun, but he's also pretty well-spoken too.
Yeah, he's very well-spoken. He gets a bad rap. He's a very smart, very intelligent guy. And I think sometimes there's a bad impression of him at times.
That's really fun to hear. Number seven for you, going away from athlete, how about the coolest ESPN talent that you've worked with?
Trey Wingo, hands down. Trey Wingo is one of the coolest people I've met in life, let alone at ESPN.
Oh, he definitely does a great job. I'm sure you, among many others, were happy to hear that he had re-upped with ESPN for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. He's definitely a really great guy, and if you ever had the opportunity to see him on site, you know, he's a wonderful guy.
And he has, like, the best name in sports media, too. I mean, Trey Wingo, come on, how can you do better than that? All right, just a couple more left for you, Nita. Number eight, maybe stick along the same theme. The ESPN talent that best utilizes social media and why?
I would honestly say it's Adam Schefter. I think there's not many people in the NFL that follow social media that don't have him on push notifications on Twitter. His tweets are the most engaging for a journalist, and he understands it. He's bought into it, and he does all of his news reporting from his Twitter account.
Ah, it's very, very interesting. And you always see him with like two or three phones, and you know it's important when other journalists are probably following him to get their latest news, because he is the source, like you spoke to.
Yeah, he's basically the godfather of sports NFL journalism. It's not legitimate, one, unless he says it, and two, unless we say it. So
totally. All right. Number nine for Nita, going back to maybe your NFL days. With the Cowboys, at least at the team level, or even now, the NFL city, and I know you're going to be doing a lot of touring this year with Monday Night Football, so you'll get to see a lot more cities even. The NFL city with the best food in general, and how about the best thing you've eaten in one of those cities?
That's a tough question. I would honestly say that the city with the best food is probably New York. I'm a huge, huge fan of some of the Reuben sandwich, and they've got some good stuff up there. As far as the actual stadium is concerned, I would honestly say the best stadium food I've had, as far as press box, is in St. Louis. They had an omelet station there that was incredible.
Wow.
Just custom omelets. Yeah, it was incredible. But I was also a fan of the Seattle stadium, CenturyLink. They had a Starbucks in the press box, and
naturally.
I'm a huge fan. So naturally, being Seattle and Starbucks being founded there. They had a Starbucks up in the press box. One, it was free, and two, it was delicious. So I was a fan of that.
But is there a barista in the press box? That's the question.
Yes, there was a barista.
Oh, wow. That is epic. That's awesome. All right, last one for you. Need a little bonus here for you. You're from Texas originally. So what happens first? Do the Cowboys win a Super Bowl, or will the University of Texas win a college football national title?
Wow, that's tearing me apart. I'll honestly say that University of Texas will win a football title before.
So Charlie Strong's going to deliver one for the Hook'em Horns, huh?
I think so. I think he's the coach for the job.
I love it. All right, Nita, you survived your nice season, Nita. Had a lot of fun with that. Now it's your chance to take over the podcast and give us your social media all-star to follow. Someone on Twitter or a blogger, whoever, who they are and why they're worth following.
I'm a fan on Twitter of people that just provide some humor, just someone that kind of breaks through what the clutter of what everyone else does. I'm a huge fan of one of my coworkers, actually, Steve Braband. I like to make fun of him and kind of give him some hard times for what he tweets, but he does some funny tweets, and I would say Steve Braband on Twitter is definitely someone I'd recommend. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. That's good. It's always good to have someone that can chime in and give you a laugh. At the end of the day, social media, it's informative, but it's also just to entertain and amuse. That's great.
Absolutely.
Right, how about yourself? Where can we find you? And also all things ESPN, ESPN NFL, ESPN Monday Night Football, where can we find all that stuff on social and digital media?
You can find me on Twitter at Nita Shrikant, just my first and last name. For as far as the work accounts, you can see ESPN NFL, ESPN Monday Night on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I'm pretty much all over the place. If you just Google Nita Shrikant, you'll find me.
And you will be on site for all the Monday Night Football games this coming season, right?
Yeah, start in a couple of weeks. I'm headed to Cleveland for the first preseason broadcast, and then we go straight to Tampa, and then we're going to have a little bit of a break, and then starting week one, Atlanta, and I'm with the crew all the way up until the end of to the Pro Bowl in Hawaii.
Oh, we can't wait, and I'm sure it's exciting for you, and those properties are in good hands because you clearly know what you're doing and are very talented. So we really thank you for coming on the podcast tonight. I mean, I know it's the off season, but there is no off season in football. That's for darn sure, especially now with all that Brady news breaking. So really appreciate you you giving us some of your time and sharing your expertise on the podcast, Nita.
Thank you so much for having me, Neil. I had a blast.
Hey, enjoy the season, and we'll be following you all over Twitter and all over social media and engaging every day.
I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you so much again, Nita Shrikant, social media producer for ESPN. Really had a great conversation with her, had a lot of fun, learned a lot as well, and we cannot thank her enough for her time because there really is no off season in the NFL, and it's a busy day every day and a lot of work to be done, a lot of fans to engage, of course, that love every little bit of content that she is putting out there related to football and the NFL and sports in general, of course. But that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thanks a lot for listening. Come back again next time. Get more information on the podcast at dsmsports.net. And, of course, follow me, your host, Neil Horowitz, on Twitter at NJH287. Until then, enjoy your sports. NFL will be here soon enough, as Nita knows very well. And we'll see you next time on the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.